Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So the Media Project has a lot to talk about this week, and we are very glad that you're with us for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and if we're lucky, some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union here at the WAMC studios in Albany, New York. Next to me in the studio is Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Hello, Rex. Nice to see you.
Wonderful to see
you. Who's this person over here?
In person, indeed. Dr. Alan Shartok is here. He of the ankle injury that has detained him at his posh residential studio in the Berkshire Mountains of Massachusetts. He's back. He's back.
Well, no, that's true. It is posh and it's lovely and I've gotten used to it, so I don't want to come anymore.
Fine. Amble. See if you can, amble your way out the door there. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be an easy task, but it's great to see you. What do you know? You know, you're not looking so much worse for the wear.
Nah, I'm feeling worse for the wear, but why complain?
Yeah.
Where's your hat?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's no hat. I thought I was going to say you've had a haircut. It doesn't have a hat on. That's the difference here.
Yeah, somewhere.
How about that? Anyway, it's great to have you here in person, Alan. It's always more fun to see the expression on your face when we insult
when you. When you insult me. What is it about you, Rex? It's this holdover from the old days in which newspapers would spit down the hill at the electronic media. And I see a sort of smirk on your face right now. Are you still spitting down the hill?
I don't hold anything against the electronic media in general. No, we only hurt those we love, Alan, you know.
Only those in the electronic media who read the print stories on the air without attribution. That rarely happens here, I have to say.
Not here at WAMC.
Yeah, not only that, but I think things may be changing a little bit in that there does seem to be more sharing of attribution between various media. I saw the Washington Post quoted in the New York Times the other day. Now, sometimes there are good reasons to do that. You do it because you're afraid that maybe this isn't good information and you want to lay it at the other guy's doorstep. But I do think we are seeing more sharing.
Well, isn't that economically driven, Rex? There's more partnerships going on between print and broadcast in a like community?
I think there's some of that. Definitely some of that is true. And some of it actually is an ethical question. The people who talk a lot about journalism ethics make a point that not only should you attribute stuff to people, but nowadays you really need to provide hot links. That it's unethical for you to, say, use a story that you got from the Times Union if you don't link to timesunion.com. You don't just say, as the Times Union reported, you provide the hot link. Because our revenue comes from users, and so you have to have that traffic as a fair way of doing
it. Was that decided at a mountaintop retreat where all of the newspapers got together and said, this is what ethical behavior would look like?
You know, actually, now that you mention it, you weren't invited. That's right.
And for the uninitiated, the hot links doesn't refer to a breakfast meal.
Nor does somebody on MASH.
No.
Hot link Sulan. No, hot link is, that is a link in the text of an online story to where that story originated on some other site. There you go.
Yeah, and one of the potential problems for the originating site, meaning not the site that you're linking into, is that once you go on the TU site and link into another news organization, there's always the fear that you're not going to come back to the Times Union or wherever you started.
Right, and part of our strategy, our digital strategy going forward, and I think this is not revealing anything because you see this really effectively done on the Washington Post and the New York Times. Part of the digital strategy is you embed into something that somebody's reading related material that they might find interesting based upon what that content is that they're reading. Mm-hmm. and their history, perhaps, of what they've liked before. So you'll get more hot links, and the notion is that people get stuck there intentionally. They like that, and so they look at that, and then they look at that because, you know, we're humans, and so we're distracted, and so you burrow in deeper into that site.
So when we were kids, we used to play a game called Capture the White Flag, and the idea was to drag the other guy over the line and into your place and capture him.
There you go.
And so that's what you were doing.
Absolutely. Is this a Fire Island story?
Yes, it is.
Don't encourage him. Oh, my goodness.
Now that you mention it.
Gentlemen, here we make note of something. There are three old white guys sitting here. It's just coincidental because some days, of course, we are joined by women on this panel. But here is a new study by the Women's Media Center that reports that the majority of news coverage in the United States is still written and produced by men. At 20 of the nation's top media outlets, men produce about 62.3% of news coverage. Now, these are 20 of the nation's top media outlets. So anyway, before I go on, what do you think about this?
Well, it's very interesting, I thought. You know, I watch CNN a lot now. We're lying there with my foot up in the air, icing it, and I was watching CNN all day long. They've got a lot of women on that station. But if you want to talk sexism, every last one of them, almost every last one of them, is drop-dead gorgeous. Now, this is something you don't talk about very much because it's not de rigueur. Somebody will probably write me a letter and say, so what does it matter that everybody's gorgeous? You mean to say that they're not aware of that when they're hiring all of these people? Very smart people, by the way. It's the old political science thing, necessary and sufficient. It is necessary to be bright, but it isn't sufficient. You also have to be beautiful, apparently.
Huh.
And I think that's sexist. I don't like that.
But most of the male hosts are also good looking, aren't they? I don't think the commentators. Yeah. It's a wonderful thing. We have a woman in the studio as a producer, and I might note that she just gave us a little. What do you call that little gesture when you make your hand go, not so hot?
No, we have objectified women in the society in a way we have not done with men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're an exception. Everybody knows you're 6'3". And you have gray hair and that you keep your weight down and all the rest of it. And on your column every Saturday, they have an absurd picture of you standing there with your hands on your waist, looking out at the audience.
I'm holding now, in my gut.
Not at all true, Rex. You're a very handsome man. I say that only because I think the audience ought to know who they're dealing with. Now, Ira and I don't fit into that.
Well, if I had to pose for a similar picture of myself, it would take up too much newsprint. So it's just as well that I'm retired at this point. Well,
the lack of gender parity, this study says, is most evident at major TV news networks. There you go, Alan, confirming your point, where men report three times as much of the news as women do. At newspapers and internet media, the story's a little better. Men produce 62% of the news at major print outlets, 54% in digital media. Biggest disparities, by the way, are at the New York Daily News and at USA Today. USA Today, where a woman just became the editor-in-chief, by the way, Joanne Lippman.
But do you think that there is a sexism involved here, or is this just an evolutionary issue? I mean, I'm actually surprised that there's more parity in print, because I would have thought that there were many men hired who are there because they're senior, but I don't see any reluctance on print or broadcast to hiring women. And
almost all the young reporters I've hired are women. Mm-hmm. I find it much harder to find men, actually, as young reporters nowadays, and the journalism schools are turning out about two-thirds women over men. Mm-hmm. Of course, in general, that's true of higher education. More women than men are going through
law schools also.
And law schools, yeah.
Right.
So I think it's increasingly going to be a women's business. I think that probably this statistic is a reflection of history, that
that's right.
As the staffing has downsized and the layoffs tend to go last in, first out, you know, the senior people are male. They've been here longer. And so as the old guys, like some of us in this room, disappear.
Speak for yourself, Rex.
There will be more, a higher proportion of women. But it makes a difference. Why does it make a difference? Because our gender does affect our perspective on news.
You think that's so, right?
Without a doubt. And I think it's still the case. But when I was the editor of my newspaper, there was a particular push on to get more minorities in newsrooms. And in my case, from a relatively small newspaper, it was very hard to do because the larger newspapers also wanted to bring in minorities and might have hired minorities with less experience, the kind of experience that I would have been more likely to hire, and people would get the experience at my paper and then get to the larger papers. The larger papers were hiring minorities, but to the point, we did have minorities who brought us stories that we the white men in the room would not have thought of or not have been aware of because the minorities were part of their own communities and bringing in stories to us that we didn't know about.
So here at Public Radio, we don't pay that much. I mean, we pay fair amounts, and we're trying like crazy to kick it up a bit. Nevertheless, we're finding it difficult to hire people.
Yes. Well, actually, I'm not surprised. There's great competition for outstanding journalists now. In fact, I had a conversation a few months ago with Mike Oreskes, who runs NPR News,
who is excellent. What a wonderful guy.
Wonderful guy.
And wonderful. Every time I mention NPR, you get very defensive of NPR.
Because he's my friend.
Yelling at me.
Yeah, well, but the point that I was trying to make before being interrupted was that Oreskes said that there were probably, he knew right off the top of his head, of about 60 positions available for people with the skills of audio producers, people that he would like to hire. Because think about it, if you're in public radio, the skills that you're looking for to be at the level that he's talking about, you have to be a really good reporter to understand journalism. You have to be a great storyteller to do really good stories. And you have to have all these digital recording skills, the engineering capacity, really, that most journalists, like people that I hire, don't have. So that's a tough job. And to have 6 of them that he could immediately fill, he said, he doesn't just mean at NPR, but at member stations as well.
And that is interesting because, as we all know, and in fact, we had the head of standards and practices from NPR paying us a visit yesterday, a delightful young man, I had to make it clear to him that he didn't have the same problems we did because they paid so much more money, our money, to the people who they hire at NPR.
Well, God bless him.
Do your people here at WAMC also shoot video for the website or pictures?
They can,
for the website?
And they do sometimes, yeah. Sure. And that's true. I was listening to Rex spew on there, but his people have to have a whole bunch of new skills that they didn't have in the old days.
That's right.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. You know, one of the most interesting elements that's going on among the larger media as well in Donald Trump's America is that...
By the way, folks, when Rex goes, it means he's going to lie. But go ahead.
I was just drawing emphasis to what I had just said. Donald Trump's America is that there is what Carolyn Ryan, who is in charge of recruiting at the New York Times, calls a ferocious battle for investigative talent.
Sure.
Investigative reporting is increasingly the coin of the realm for great journalism. And she says, it's the most intense I've ever seen, and I've been hiring reporters for a long time.
And there aren't that many of them out there. I've offered we have an investigative reporter slot open now, a producer slot. And I've offered several people who are senior journalists the position, and they say, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. I've never done that. I've edited it, but I can't do it.
Well, it is worth noting here that a great investigative reporter for the Houston Chronicle, a guy named Brian Rosenthal, is joining the New York Times Metro investigative team to cover City Hall and Albany. So they're specifically adding an investigative reporter who will do city and state issues.
And you know why?
Relevant to me.
Why? Because City Hall and Albany represent the most opportunistic place to catch a lot of people.
That's true. I was hoping that you were going to say, because they've noticed how well the Times Union is doing, and so they need to have competition there.
No, thank you very much. But I know that, and you do a good job. You really do. And you have some terrific people working for you. And uncharacteristically, I want to just say that. But I also want to offer you an opportunity.
Yes, sir.
So let's say, you know, the Times Union and WAMC get together.
Cool.
And you'll bring something to the table, we'll bring something to the table, I'd be happy to do that.
We need the art of the deal here. Would you like to be our broker?
I suggested that. Seems to me there's more of that going on because of the lack of resources. You know, and I don't know if Rex implied it or maybe he doesn't agree with it. Certainly newspapers would like to do more investigative reporting if they have the resources because that's what newspapers do. But it's now, I think, more imperative because with the decline in print readership, particularly, having a good investigative reporting team producing the kinds of stories that have some meat on it are the kinds of stories that are going to sell newspapers.
Absolutely.
Except
right.
Except I want to speak for Rex because he'll say it before I do. So I want to say it. Rex is going to tell you that we don't have a decline in newspaper readership. We actually have.
No, I said print readership.
Oh, yeah.
Newspaper readership has never been higher.
Well, but when you look at your device, your iPhone, and you see these letters like A and B and C and D, what do you think those are?
Alphabet?
That's print.
Oh, that's print. Oh, I see.
So the distinction of print readership, you mean on the paper readership, don't you?
Yes, in the case of the example I just made, but I've been saying for the longest time people are bogged down by the use of the old word newspaper and saying newspapers are dying when, in fact, more people are reading the content that is in newspapers than ever before between the newspaper and the digital side.
Yeah, it is too bad that the word paper is in there because people associate us with that. I wish we could come up with the new word. You know, like, remember when we had an inflation czar, Alfred Kahn, came into the Carter administration. Boy, are we old. That's the editorial.
You're
only speaking for myself. And he thought that the word inflation in itself gave rise to more inflation. People were fearful of inflation. So he said, we're not going to call it inflation. We're going to call it banana. You know, just to come up with a word. So I wish we could come up with a word other than newspaper.
Well, I mean, you hear e-edition, you hear e-paper, but again, the word paper is involved. I mean, if and when there actually are no more newspapers, then the editions that will survive will be called something else. But right now, it's the historic word.
So here we are in March 2017. I have a question for you guys. We've been talking about this for a long time. If and when there are no more newspapers, just a very quick survey. Do you guys think that we really are on that precipice that we may be facing no more newspapers?
No, are you saying, what do you, well, that goes to Breyer's question.
No more physical newspapers.
No more print.
Yeah.
Well, there will be far fewer very soon. And indeed, I think I've mentioned this before, the notion that some very bright people have said that we're less than a century away from no paper at all.
Right.
That everything will be transmitted digitally. And my theory has always been that we're going to be able to, we embed chips in dogs to make sure they don't get lost.
Sure.
We can, with miniaturization, we can embed chips in humans, I would think, to give us access to material that we can download. And perhaps we'll be able to activate this by body part. Maybe I'll pull on my earlobe to get a heads up display in front of me of the name so that when I look at you, I don't have to think, what's his name? Shartok.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it will just tell me right there.
And part of the answer to what you're asking is driven not by people's desire to read print, but the business side. I mean, as we sit here yesterday, Sears said they don't know whether they how much longer they can stay in business. Well, mm-hmm. Sears is a huge newspaper print advertiser. You start, and there some have already left. And in my market, JCPenney is gone. At some point in time, how many of those, you know, 5 and 6 figure accounts can you afford to lose and print a newspaper?
Absolutely. You know, I've asked you guys this question before, and you've given me some kind of mealy-mouthed answer. So I just want to ask you again. It would seem to me that under the law of supply and demand, one of your biggest expenses is the purchase of newsprint.
Right.
Correct.
Now, as fewer and fewer newspapers exist, and as the demand goes down, you would think that the price of the newsprint would be lowered, but it isn't. How come?
Well, I haven't been involved with newsprint purchasing in a while, but the prices were competitive and were going down when I was retiring, and already what we're seeing was happening. So there was more of a competition among the remaining newsprint producers. So
interesting, because the answer has changed over the years.
Part of the problem is that it's an extremely cyclical industry, and they take these plants offline, these newsprint, very quickly, and bring them back up.
And they monitor, sort of like OPEC, how much oil they produce, it enables them to charge more money or less money.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. By the way, if you're just joining us and you haven't figured out who these people are, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith here with Ira Fussfeld and Alan Shartok.
How come I always come last?
Well, because you're down at the end. I shouldn't say anything offensive, should I?
Because no. We'll have to. He'll edit it out.
Yeah. Dr. Shartok, he's the only man in the room with a PhD. We don't intend to put him last.
And a broken ankle.
Yeah, that too. Yep, there he is down there. So if you want to offer your comments, media@wamc.org, and we will read them on the next show, media@wamc.org. We haven't even talked about the great sideshow, actually the center stage show in Washington. Let's take just a moment to say a word about that other Rex, who you may have heard of, the guy who's the Secretary of State, the former CEO of ExxonMobil, Rex Tillerson. So he did a recent trip to Asia, and when he went to the Korean Demilitarized Zone, Rex Tillerson excluded the pool reporter representing U.S. networks. That is, usually there's one person who goes along and then feeds the information to everybody if you can't take a whole phalanx of reporters, and it's not unusual. That has been standard operating practice in Washington for decades. But he excluded the pool reporter, and instead he had just a team from Fox News. That is, Fox News, the affiliate of the Trump administration, posing as a genuine news organization. So this is just the latest offense by Secretary Tillerson, who seems to have an aversion to media coverage. We've talked about this before.
He doesn't like them.
He doesn't like any media. They went 6 weeks without having any kind of a press
briefing.
When he was at
his oil company, he didn't care. He didn't need to do that.
Well, that's the key point. He came from private industry, and they're very closed mouth in private industry, and they can control the message. And this is an entirely new animal for him, and he believes it can carry over. And it will carry over unless enough voices speak up to make a change here.
And when he went on his trip, on his flight, he usually takes the press corps with him. That is, has been, again, the Secretary of State's custom since long before Henry Kissinger. And in this case, he took only a single reporter with him from the right-wing publication Independent Journal Review, a young woman named Erin McPike. And I just want to point out, I will show this in the studio, apropos our earlier question about young ladies, this is the photograph of Erin McPike.
Well, she's on each week on the media program on Fox, the Howard Kurtz media program, every Sunday. She's become something of a regular. Again, I hesitate to describe her this way other than she's very attractive, and they always have her sitting in the seat where she can show her legs. That said, she does have some journalism background. I believe she was at CNN at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is some agita, not just because they sent only her or they chose only her, but the White House press corps is not happy about how or at all she shared information on that trip, that she should have been, in effect, a pool reporter for the rest of the press corps. And she did an interview with Morning Joe, I believe, and Julie Pace of the AP was there, and they had a bit of a spat. And she, McPike, said, no, my boss has decided we didn't want to share it as a pool report. So,
which is interesting. I've always wondered about that. You guys, we only have a couple seconds here. But I've always wondered about the pool reporter, the ethics of the pool reporter. You know, do they have to share, or they...
Yeah, that is the whole notion of a pool. Our Washington correspondent is periodically pool. It rotates, and we, you know, the Times Union shares a Washington reporter with our newspapers, our sister papers in Fairfield County, Connecticut. And the pool reporter is obligated to be as comprehensive as possible because you don't know what somebody else might find useful. So it's a great responsibility, and people take it very seriously. And when a news organization decides to blow it off, and that is probably with collusion from the person that they're covering, because the person's saying, okay, you're going as the pool reporter instead. That was not part of the agreement, apparently, that Rex Tillerson struck with IJR.
Now, you said something that piqued my interest. You and the Connecticut newspaper share a Washington reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Hearst does not have Washington reporter, or do all of your large papers have Washington people?
Each of the five major properties, the other papers each have their own, yes.
So is the thinking there that although there may be some redundancy, on the other hand, the Washington reporter for your newspaper will be more involved with, say, Schumer or the congressman, et cetera, to localize
there
the
should
coverage?
Be no redundancy. Our reporter is doing local stories out of Washington.
Right. Well, that's
okay,
good.
So we only have a minute left, but I wanted to say something. We had a wonderful visit with, I may have mentioned this to you guys, from the standards and practices person at NPR. And I asked him for examples of what kinds of decisions he and the others make. And one of them is the word lie. We've discussed this on the show.
Uh-huh.
We can't get inside Trump's head, so we don't know if he's purposely lying or if he's purposely prevaricating. And so the last thing I want to say about Trump on this show, in violation of what the standards and practices person at NPR might say, is liar.
So NPR is advocating not to use that word?
Yes.
That has been their decision, yeah. So, but that is not necessarily the practice that will be followed by WAMC.
Well, we own them. They don't own us.
Exactly. There you go. And that is it for the Media Project this week. The last word, at least, going to Dr. Shartok. We appreciate that. Alan Shartok and Ira Fussell and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week on the Media Project.
Liar!
All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast the Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
And to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.